Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers who are working on solutions that face our fellow individual community members, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This is George Koster, your host. This episode is part of our series exploring COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area. Back in April of 2020, when we decided to create this ongoing series on COVID-19's impact, first on nonprofits and then on small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area, we, like you, had no idea how long the pandemic would go on and what the health and economic impact would be in our community. As we enter our second year of the global COVID-19 pandemic, with record numbers of both cases and deaths, our schools, businesses, and governments are still struggling to deal with the health, economic, mental, and societal impacts of the latest Omicron variant. This all adds to the ongoing uncertainty of our ever-changing indoor and outdoor, vaccinated and unvaccinated protocols, and the politics of the pandemic that will drive how we all come back together as a unified or fractured community. We will continue to shine a spotlight on the nonprofits and small businesses that make up the fabric of our community, along with the founders and staff who are struggling to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on their operations, services, and sustainability until we can all get to the other side of the pandemic. Along the way, we will also share with you all the amazing solutions that our nonprofits, small businesses, foundations, and government leaders are working on to help us all get to the other side of the pandemic and come together to rebuild our communities with more economic, social, and environmental equality.
A lot of times when our students leave and go away to college, a lot of them don't come back. Things are just different for them. They get to see a whole new different world, and then that changes them. People don't understand how supporting our youth in the poverty-stricken areas of Oakland, I hate saying that, but it's a reality, how helping us to get them out, to change them. It's like we as a society want better. We want different. We don't want all the violence. We don't want all the killing. So what do? We have to get them out of that. We have to educate them. We have to give them something to live for. I mean, it's survival of the fittest. If this is where they live and they're trying to survive, guess what? This is what happens. If we want change, we have to give more monies to help the change. We try to do all we can, but, you know, we can only do so much with the funds that we get.
In this episode, we feature the voices of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation. To provide context to our panel discussion with the Executive Director, Phyllis O'Para, and Board of Directors member, Philip Palmer, along with program alumni, Rotha So, and Albert Jenkins, we wanted to feature the voice of the founder, Oral Lee Brown. Ms. Brown's promise to Oakland's most at-risk youth, if they stayed in school and got admitted to college, she would pay for their college education, as well as providing wraparound support services, has changed the lives of hundreds of children over the Oral Lee Brown Foundation's 30-plus years of operation.
When I was around 9 years old, we lived in Mississippi on a farm. And back then, there was something called bordering and barring and all of these things. And Miss Bessie May, there was 12 of us. I had 12 siblings. And most of the families back then had big families. And sis, one of Miss Bessie May's daughter, came down to our house. And she said, Miss Nazana, my mama said, would you give her a piece of meat to cook some greens? I looked at my mother. She got up. And she went to the stove, and this big pot was on the stove with some big pot of peas my mother was cooking. She takes the pot off the stove, take the salt pork meat out of the pot, cut it in half, put a piece back in the pot, and send this other half to Miss Bessie May. It would have been easy for her to say, tell your mother I don't have any more, because she didn't. And for her to take nothing, because we had nothing, but to share that, to me, it's something that I would never be able to be as big as my mother. So I think that was the inspiration for me to say then that whatever I have in life, I will share it, and I will always try to give back.
Sometimes be careful what you ask. I would sit in the cotton field and stand up in the cotton field day after day and promise God, get me out of Mississippi. I'll do whatever you have me to do. And I guess I was blessed. At the age of 12, my mother sent me to live with my sister. I had $6 to $7 in a number 8 paper bag. That's what paper bag used to come by numbers. And that's what I left Mississippi with. But standing in that cotton field day after day, I would just look up and promise God, get me out and I'll do whatever, Lord, you ask me to do. Again, be careful what you promise. And he commissioned me one day to take on this class. And at the time, I was making $45,000 a year in 1987 when I adopted the class at Brookville Elementary School. And it was more than a notion because no one believed in us. It was the kids and myself. I remember once asking a friend to buy a $50 ticket for an event that we wanted to have. And she looked at me and said, you adopted those kids. I didn't. And so there was hurtful times. But, you know, if God commissioned you to do something, I believe he will see you through. It was the kids and I. We didn't even have a foundation. I had no idea what I was doing. And what happened, I wanted to raise money. And at that time, Alameda County Supervisor Don Parada said, in order to do this, you need a foundation. And I'm saying, I don't know how to do a foundation. He said, I'll send one of my attorneys out to your office and he will do the paperwork. And that's how the foundation was born. And so after 29 years of tears and sweat and hard work, we have not missed a payment for a child, tuition, room and board and food. And we have been there every step of the way. I have been there every step of the way. You do what you have to do, and to me, what you promise to do. I've never taken a salary from the foundation in the 29 years that I've worked there. And every year except 2008, I have given the foundation $10,000 a year. And I truly believe that God say, whatever you give, he will give it 4 times. And for me, sometimes it's been 10 times. So I just try to do his will and to try to help his kids. That's the one thing that I can do and give to them that no one can take away. And I explain to them, there will be time that you will not get the job that you deserve, but don't worry about it. Because when you get that education, they may not give you the job, but they cannot take the education away. And so you just move forward.
I'm joined remotely by the executive director of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation, Phyllis Opara, and board of director member Philip Palmer, along with program alumni Rotha So and Albert Jenkins. Welcome to Voices of the Community, Phyllis, Roth, Albert, and Philip. I'd like to start with Phyllis to just provide the audience a quick overview of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation, your services and programs.
Hi, yes. In 1987, Ms. Brown was at her real estate office on 94th and East 14th Street, and she usually frequented a corner store. And so this particular day, while she was at the store, she encountered a small girl about 8, 9 years old, and she asked Ms. Brown if she would buy her something. Ms. Brown thought she was going to ask for candy, cookies, or something like that. But instead, she went and got cheese, bologna, and bread. So she was like, oh, this girl's hungry. She wants food. So she told her, get anything you want, and I'll pay for it. So the girl got what she wanted, and she left. And so Ms. Brown went home, and she said it was weighing on her so much that she went looking for the little girl because she kept thinking she must be hungry. You know, she was asking the little girl, why aren't you in school? And she was saying, I can't go. And after a couple of months of going back to the store and not finding the little girl, Ms. Brown started going to the different schools looking for her. And when she got to Brookville Elementary School, she talked to the principal there, and she went in and started talking to the first grade class. And she was asking them, so where do you see yourself after high school? And she said she was just grief stricken because a lot of them didn't think that they would make it to the 12th. A lot of them, with all the violence that they see in their life, they didn't see a future for themselves. She went home and she talked to her husband, and she came back and she told the principal and the teacher that she wanted to adopt the first grade class, and she wanted to give them hope. She told them, if you can stay in school and if you can get to 12th grade, I will send you to any college that you want to, and I will pay for everything. She found out it took more than just saying, hey, here's a promise, and I'll deliver. She said, for some of the students, they may need shoes or they need coats. You know, during those years, they needed more than that. She had to go to court with some of them because of things that may have happened. Some needed food. So along those 11 years, she just became a support system for them. And this was in 87. So she figured, okay, I'm doing a lot more than this promise. So that's when in 1988, the foundation began. And then she began to get volunteers and people to come and help and support so she could really help and give the students all that they needed. Because she figured out, okay, a lot of the students, once they got in high school and were about to take TSAT, they were still not at the level that they should be, although they were in school. So that's when she began the Saturday school. So she could mentor and tutor and give them everything that they needed to make it to college because it just wasn't working. So that's why we began having the Saturday school after school for the students to give them other things that they weren't getting at school. We were like the bridge between home and school to make sure that they were able to go to college. And our goal was to help them break their cycle of poverty. And Ms. Brown figured the best way for her to help was to educate. And she would always say, give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. But if you teach him how to fish, then he can eat for a lifetime. But she felt that if she gave them education and educational resources and connection, that would help them for a lifetime as opposed to just giving them some money.
Thank you, Phyllis. So staying with you for a moment, how has COVID-19 impacted the operations of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation's programs?
Well, it hit March of 2020, and by April of 2020, we were up and running with Zoom. We had students on Zoom, and we were able to help and support them because, as you know, a lot of the students in Oakland, they didn't have access to computer or internet. So what we did was we partnered with the Deltas and they came in and the parents and students who didn't have computers, we gave out the computers to them and gave them the internet connection so that they could have access to keep learning because it was like, okay, well, we're going to start our Zoom. Okay, what's a Zoom? Well, we don't know how to do the computer. How do we connect it? So it was a lot going on there, but we were able to get everybody up, get them connected. But it's been a challenge. Everybody don't learn by Zoom. You tell them to go in there, get online, and they're in their sleep or they're falling asleep or it's just not something they need to be hands-on. So it was just like, okay, what do we do now? Okay, we're going to do some exercise. Go get some stuff. Let's just move, do something with our hands. It was challenging, but it was fun. Let me just put it out. It was challenging, but fun. Yeah.
So as we're essentially going into our second year of the COVID pandemic, has the foundation and its programs been able to continue to service all of its students? And are people actually able to come back in person?
Well, in October, we did open back up for in-person, but as of January, we're back down again because of the high rise in COVID cases. Some of the students, believe it or not, stopped going to school, fell out. So it's been us trying to get them back in school, back connected to school. Because when the students came back in October, the challenge we found was it's been almost 2 years. So just say that this student left the second half of kindergarten. But now when they come back, the kid is in second grade. Now they went ahead and put this child in second grade. But now this child who should be trying to read, who should know his ABCs, 1, 2, 3s, and who should know his colors, don't have a clue. So the school has moved forward and he's in a second grade. But we have to go back and give him that foundation that he needs to keep going. Because by the schools putting him in second grade, he's lost because he don't have the foundation that he should have to continue to excel. He can't continue to excel because he don't have the foundation. If some of them are reading and this one is not reading, he's getting lost. Who's in there giving him the basic stuff? But it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge.
Thank you. Really great insights into how the pandemic has really impacted entire families. in so many fronts. I'm going to turn to you, Philip, and ask you just to provide a quick background on your relationship with the foundation. How did you become a member of the board? And with that, how has COVID impacted your fundraising efforts?
Well, I met Ms. Brown way back in the early 90s. I was part of a group that organized Community Bank of the Bay as the first community development bank in California, really. And she became a customer. But before we opened the bank, there was news about the work she was doing in the community. And I was really impressed with her commitment to the kids at such an early age. And she is able to engage them before they get turned off to education. And she ended up opening up an account with the bank. So I would see her from time to time. And then fast forward, I had to move back east to take care of my parents. And when I came back, I was at Office Depot and ran into Ms. Brown at the counter. So I asked her, are you still doing the scholarships? And she said, yeah. She said, we need some help. Would you consider sitting on the board? And I said, yeah, I want to support what you're doing. But when I was back home, my mother was a member of a women's club that had a scholarship program for high school kids. And they had reached the age where they couldn't do it anymore. And they were trying to get younger women to take over the program, but they had no success with it. The program just went away. So I told Ms. Brown, you know, I'm interested in learning how you're doing this and seeing if it can be replicated back in Connecticut, where I'm from, and also a local program here to sustain the Orley Brown Foundation. And I'm willing to help try to raise funds for the financial services community, insurance and real estate finance to fund the program. So this is the beginning of my second year on the board, and we had one banquet fundraiser, and then COVID hit. And the banquet was very inspirational. There's broad community support for the program. The alumni is there. It's really heartwarming. But we were getting ready for the next one, and then COVID. But we just redoubled our efforts to, you know, keep things going and build on what you got going.
So have funders, you think, stepped up because of COVID, or have folks stepped back?
Well, I think some of the folks from the tech community could step forward a bit more. Things are going well for them. We could use their support. I don't know if they don't know about us, but if anybody's listening, you can easily find us at the website. And Ms. Brown has a goal of trying to create a boarding school. And if we could create some corporate partnerships to draw in the financial support at that level, that could become a reality. And it would be huge for the kids of East Oakland. And we'd also like to expand geographically. So I'm all in on that. And I'm going to keep knocking on doors.
Thank you, Philip. We're going to come back to that question about fundraising. I want to turn to our two alumni members and start with you, Ratha. Could you share with the audience how you first got engaged in the Orley Foundation's programs?
Yeah, so I actually was recruited in the Orley Brown Foundation when I was a sophomore in high school, and I was approached by one of my high school teachers at the time who was so very persistent on me applying to this scholarship program. And at first, like, you know, I'm a first generation student and I wasn't really too familiar with college and the whole concept of scholarship programs and what this meant. And so I didn't really understand the process. And so as this teacher continued to push me, I ended up applying and received a letter in the mail saying that I received a scholarship. And I was shocked. I was so like, okay, what does this mean then, you know? And I remember I was contacted by Phyllis probably at that time. And she told me that I was expected to attend a Saturday meeting, which will go over in more detail of what, you know, the program is and what is expected of me as a student in the program and what the program will look like in the long term once we are in college and things like that. And I just started to feel like, wow, college can be a reality for me. And that's when it kind of really hit me about how important this opportunity was and how important it was for me to really hold on to this opportunity and comply with whatever was asked of me, which was very minimal, really. It was just attending Saturday meetings and meeting with my fellow colleagues and meeting with Ms. Brown, you know, to make sure that they hold us accountable with applying for colleges and keeping us on track and focused. So I just maintained my commitment to the program and I just remained engaged throughout the whole time.
And staying with you, Ratha, have you graduated from college?
Yeah, I'm currently 30 years old. And so I was able to graduate from UC Davis. And obviously, because it was a full ride scholarship, I didn't accrue any student loans. with my undergrad education. And so therefore, I felt like after I graduated, it was possible to pursue a grad degree, for which I attended USC social work program. And I'm currently working as a social worker in Alameda County. And I honestly do say that if it wasn't for the Orley Brown Foundation to have my whole undergrad paid for by the scholarship, I wouldn't have pursued my grad degree. And I would not be sitting where I am today in my career and where I am in my life.
Thank you. And Albert, same question. How did you first find out about Orley Foundation's programs and get engaged in the program?
Sure. I found out about the program when I was 11 years old. I was in sixth grade at the time. At my middle school, the Orley Brown Foundation had given my school a essay contest. And the subject was, what does college mean to you? So someone that's 11 years old, I didn't know what college was. So I didn't know. So I just know that sign up for this, you know, participate in this essay contest, win, and you could potentially win a scholarship to college, or it was a prize or whatever it was. My teachers put out the essay and they put it out to the whole student body. So out of maybe a couple hundred kids, only five of us kids in the school, from the sixth graders to seventh and eighth graders, they only participated in the essay contest, right? And just to even reflect on that and just to see the trajectory of all five students' lives and the gap that was created because of this program and because of opportunity like this, if I just reflect on all of our lives, that was even those five 11-year-old students and the direction that all our lives have taken or the journey that we've taken, the Orley Brown Foundation is a key component in how our lives unravel, for better or for the worse. So to fast forward it, to make a short story shorter, I wrote the essay, won the scholarship, and didn't know what I was getting myself into. I think similar to Rotha, we had to come to the program foundation for Saturday school, the introduction, this is what you're going to be doing. You're going to be meeting here on Saturdays, you know, the expectations from the parents and their participation in the program. And then what, you know, what's just going to be going on. So it's a little different from Rotha. I grew up in the program. I was a child growing up. She was like coming in high school. I was basically fresh out of elementary school and then joined the program. So I've seen the program in many different ways. I've seen many different faces just from the production that they put on, from the fundraising, the grassroots, just bringing awareness to the program from the different volunteers that would give their time, their efforts, and their money throughout the different organizations that were aware of us, for the people that came, have gone. So that was my history with the program. I was a child and I'm now a 30-year-old adult and I'm still around. It's because that the program has changed my life tremendously. And it's things that I reflect on today that I didn't know that the program did for me. It's still very influential in my life today.
And Albert, you obviously completed college, it sounds like, as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. That was an important part, right? Yes. So upon graduating high school, I went to Florida for school and I wanted to just go as far as I could, as far as possible. I think I applied to Oxford in the UK. Didn't get in. I don't know why. Whatever. I applied to Hawaii, Mananoa. I think I got in there. But I just applied to places that were nowhere near California, nowhere near Oakland. But I was fortunate enough to get into a historical Black college called FAMU or Florida A&M in Tallahassee, Florida. Best decision I ever made in my life. And then I got me a business degree while I was there at FAMU. I've only went to undergrad, but now I have some time on my hands to reflect. COVID has slowed the world. So you have a lot of time to think about what you want to do in life and where you want to go and move forward. So I potentially may get back into school and go after my MBA, but now I know exactly like what I want to specialize in. But so far, I have a bachelor's degree in business administration.
Staying with you, Albert, where are you now? Are you in business?
So currently, I trade stocks. I invest in stocks and also trade cryptocurrencies. I am in business, indirectly. I'm not with any big corporations at the moment. I have worked for a few Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 100 companies. I'm in between work right now, but COVID has allowed me to like play on my passions and do passion work and be able to bring in income in other ways that's not like the traditional way.
Thank you. That was great. I'm going to turn back to Philip and to Phyllis and start with you, Phyllis. What do you feel has been Orley Foundation's biggest impact on the education and lives of our low-income youth in our community?
The biggest impact is just helping them see things different. You know, usually when you're in a certain area, I mean, I meet a lot of students who have never left their surrounding areas. I know adults who have never been outside of Oakland, not even to Sacramento, San Jose, Reno. So it's like their world is small. And a lot of times when the students become a part of the Orley Brown Foundation, you know, they get to go to farms, they get to go on field trips, they get to go different places. We take them on college tours. We try to enlighten them. We take them to the arts. We get them to ballets. We like to open their minds to different things outside. I mean, we're in Oakland and the violence in Oakland is very rampant. And a lot of the students who attend the foundation come from these areas. So to be able to get them outside their areas, and like I say, we tried to bridge the gap. So we tried to get them over that bridge in a way and open their eyes to different things. And a lot of times when our students leave and go away to college, a lot of them don't come back. Things are just different for them. They get to see a whole new different world. And then that changes them. People don't understand how supporting our youth in the poverty-stricken areas of Oakland, I hate saying that, but it's a reality, how helping us to get them out, to change them. It's like we as a society want better. We want different. We don't want all the violence. We don't want all the killing. So what do? We have to get them out of that. We have to educate them. We have to give them something to live for. I mean, it's survival of the fittest. If this is where they live and they're trying to survive, guess what? This is what happens. If we want change, we have to give more monies to help the change. We try to do all we can, but, you know, we can only do so much with the funds that we get. And you asked Mr. Palmer a question. Did the donations lessen? Yes, because I think people tried to spread the love around because they saw when people were sitting at home, I think people really got to see the need of what was going on in society. They began to like try to help everywhere. And it's good. But it's like, yeah, the funding did get a little shortened, but the need got greater, you know. So in order for us to help change and help the violence and help, we have to get the kids out the street. We have to give them something to do. If you're just sitting there and this is what you see, this is who you become. We have to pay attention that these youth who are out in the streets, that's our future. We'll be old and we won't be in the jobs anymore. They will be running the government and the cities and the state. We have to make sure who's running the city, the state, and the government, you know, it's going to be some Black and Brown students. So we have to make sure those Black and Brown students who are out there, who's going to be there serving us, we have to make sure they're educated. We have to make sure that they can do it for us. I mean, do you want the violent people to run us? Can you imagine what it's going to be like if that is our future? We have to change it. We have to do more, and we have to give more, you know. I hate to say it, but we definitely need more donations to get more students out of the streets and into the classrooms. And, you know, people say, why the kids are not going to school? They're trying to survive. They're trying to eat. And when COVID hit, kids who were being abused, kids who didn't have stuff, or just say your parents on drugs, but hey, they're giving more money, but are the kids getting the food? No, they're happy to get away. I mean, why are they running in stores and stealing and grabbing? People are needy out here. You know, if you're not in these communities, you don't see what's going on. And people a lot of times don't want to see it, but there is a need. And school is open for 8 hours. There's a need, and the community organizations are there to help pretty much 24 hours. Our phones don't go off. And although we're an educational resource during the pandemic, guess what? Yeah, we were sending out food. Yeah, Ms. Brown was helping do things. She would pull out her own personal wallet and help, you know. And people don't understand, you know, that we don't work 9 to 5. We work and we help and we support because our students are those students in those areas where the shootings are happening, where the killings are happening, where the people are hungry, where the people are homeless, where the people are under the bridge, they're cold. You know, We're having drives, we're getting out coats. We're always trying to do what we can to help. And we, as an educational organization, we can't send the kids to college in 10, 11 years if they done froze to death. We can't send them to college if they died of hunger. So we have to be there to help them and support them however we can to get them to that point of going to college. So it's a need.
You're listening to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the James Irvine Foundation, dedicated to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. More at irvine.org. This is George Koster, your host, and if you're just joining us, in this episode, we're discussing how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting the services and support of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation, which provides education and wraparound support services to Oakland's most at-risk youth. Let's get back to our conversation with Executive Director Phyllis O'Para and Board of Directors member Philip Palmer, along with program alumni Rotha So and Albert Jenkins, about the impact of getting an education has on low-income youth's lives.
Piggyback off of what Phyllis had said, exposure. The program allows us, the children, to be exposed to a different walk of life, a different set of whatever. It just exposes us to something else because our environment is what our environment is. We're equipped to operate in this environment. Our mindset, everything we see, our lenses is just all of this environment, how to survive and to go home and make sure I'm alive in this environment. But the Oral Lee Brown Foundation exposed me to different, just whatever it could be different. I didn't know what etiquette was. My first time going to etiquette class and knowing where the forks and the spoons and the cups should go, it was because of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation, because they understood that these kids don't see this. Let's put them in a class to do it. And then I was just reflecting on all the scenarios, all the things that have just screamed exposure, and the Oral Lee Foundation has set that foundation for us. From etiquette class, from me traveling, me going to Florida, I wanted to get away. I wanted to get as far away from Oakland as possible. And the Oral Lee Brown Foundation allowed me to do so. But when by getting away and getting on that island, getting by myself and understanding what I really like and what I really want to do in life, and being influenced by all this other positivity because of the Oral Lee Brown Foundation, now I come back to my city and now I see the beauty in my city. Now I see the hidden gems and the diamonds, and I see all the other gold that's been covered over by the filth and the violence and the hate and the drama and the hurt and the pain. Now I can see the beauty in it. I see why even Ms. Brown can see beauty in us and wanted to be able to let us know, hey, you're actually some jewels. You're actually gold. You're actually a scientist. You're actually the next president. You're actually, but if it wasn't for her ideas and her insight and her vision on what she saw when she was around, none of this would happen. I wouldn't even see. I wouldn't understand. I wouldn't think this way. I wouldn't look at things this way. Rotha probably wouldn't be on this Zoom call right now, you know, but what Phyllis just said is very true. And now that the pandemic is here, the world has changed. Things have changed. The way to get education has changed. And it's not just a scholarship program. It's just not school. Because my dad passed away when I was 16. Ms. Brown said, hey, let's go out for lunch and let's just talk and love on each other. That was way bigger than just throwing money at me for school. You know, without that time of lunch being had, I probably wouldn't even care about going to school. Or high school, when two friends of mine in the program, their parents didn't have money for them to go to their senior prom. And, you know, things like that. Like, and there's many stories that many alumni, many students have of things just like that, that makes this program so important. And it's not just funding for school. It's funding for just that gap of love that a lot of young people aren't getting, that they need to be able to grow and to be self-sufficient adults so they can reach back and pay it forward as well to another young person. But sorry for taking it over, Phyllis, you inspired me. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you for sharing the impact that the Oral Lee Foundation has had in your life. And actually, I wanted to segue over to you, Rotha, and have you share with the audience, what do you feel has been the biggest impact of Oral Lee Foundation on your life?
Yeah, obviously, there's so many different memories, like just the college tours that we went on in SoCal and, you know, attending the banquets to see all of our sponsors. Those things were great. But like how Albert kind of mentioned too, it's like it's those small moments that really made a big impact on me. Just like when, for example, like Mama Brown attended my graduation, like She drove all the way up to Davis and was just there. And I feel like her presence just made me feel like I was important to her and I meant something to her. And that was so valuable. Like, I really held on to that moment and I really appreciated her effort to just make sure that she saw me cross the stage and she saw it through with me. And, you know, it just made me feel like graduation is important, and not for the sake of just getting your degree, but it's a very big step in growing as a person and evolving into the person that I want to become. And so that small little gesture of just her being present at my graduation was so big for me, because there were some family members that weren't even there for me. And so for her to come, just really, like, my heart was so full from that moment. So stuff like that that she's done really impacted me and just made me feel like, because she believes that I'm important enough, that, you know, I should be able to build confidence in myself to pursue higher education and to even pursue careers and to do all these things. I'm backed with a ton of support, and Mama Brown's always been there to give me words of encouragement and to just be like a voice of reason. Like, we would talk and have these like random conversations, and she's just always so inspirational. Like, and I don't even know if she even knows that she's doing this, but like the words that she shared, like, she has so much wisdom and she's always so graceful with sharing what she knows. And yeah, it's just these small moments of talking to her, speaking with her, being in her presence and knowing that she has your back. Like, those little things really pushed me forward and helped me stay committed to being, you know, bigger than what I thought I could even become.
Thank you. And turning to you, Philip, what do you feel has been Orley Brown Foundation's biggest impact in our community?
Well, Ms. Brown has helped, I think it's 235 students get college degrees. And this is just what she's put together herself. And I think it demonstrates with a modest investment how we can help Oakland youth become the best versions of themselves, you know. When I moved to Oakland, they had just gone through this whole process of bringing the Raiders back. They spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on the Raiders. If they had put that money in the schools, just think of how the youth would have benefited. You know, now the Raiders have all to Vegas. But the other thing the foundation has done is inspired others to try to make a contribution as well. I know Mayor Schaaf created the Oakland Promise Program, which is essentially another version of what the Orley Brown Foundation does. So if you have more people contributing to the effort to invest in Oakland youth, I think it's all the best. And we just need to bring the business community in with stronger support. And, you know, we will stop wasting so much talent in this town. It's time to really help them become the best versions of themselves. And they'll help the city become a better place, too. So I think that's one thing Ms. Brown has done is break the log jam and get that process moving.
And Philip, staying with you and on that same point, folks who are listening to the show today, how can they support the Orley Foundation's work? And for all those corporations or tech folks out there, how can folks participate?
Well, our website is available 24/7, and call the office and make a commitment to contribute to the program. We can be innovative and find ways to come up with matches for the contributions. But the wealth in this region is so huge that there's really no excuse for a digital divide to still exist. And they can do something about that directly by contributing to the Orley Brown Foundation. And take the initiative and reach out to us if we haven't reached out to you first. So we're ready to talk at any time.
Thank you. And Phyllis, the same question for you. How can audience members support your work today or programs? You mentioned a lot of different services. For example, obviously there's food, there's clothing, there's the educational scholarship programs, but can folks also volunteer? How can folks support the work?
Yes, they can support us by volunteering. They can support us with monetary donations. They can support us when we have our banquets. We normally have a black and white tea each year. We usually have a banquet each year. And because of COVID, we started having a cocktails and conversation version. And we usually do that, I believe that was September of each year. We have the walkathon where we partner with the Oakland Board of Realtors and sponsor a walkathon every October. They can support that. We did that virtual. Some people went out and walked on their own, recorded it and uploaded it, or just a monetary donation. But yes, any support from anyone is much needed. Volunteers, donations, just being a mentor to our students. If you don't have time and you don't want to come out, we accept people who can mentor them. Like the students who are off to college, you want to call them each month and see how they're doing, just check on them, be an ear to them. If you want to be a mentor to our students who are in middle, elementary, and high school, we have openings for mentors as well. We have tutors, any retired teachers who want to come out, because like I say, we used to have the group tutoring on Saturday. But because the need is so great with the individual person, they're at different levels of what they need. It's like they need individual attention. So for tutors, mentors, retired teachers who want to give back, oh, we would really love them. So we're just open. We're an open book. Come join us and help us out.
Me and Ratha want to answer that question as well on how people could help. For one, you guys, who all that is listening, can call in to the foundation. The phone number is 510-430-3041, 510-430-3041. That's the quickest way to participate and offer your help, whatever it may be, whether it's funding dollars, scholarship dollars, initiative dollars. If you are a company that specializes in electronics or anything that has to do with the internet, laptops for the students, computers, more so than backpacks, but we're in the future now. So everything is electronic. Everything is backed by a computer or a laptop or a tablet or iPad. So those things can go a long way. Our children need to be updated technologically. So they need up-to-date technology, not just the dollars. If you are a professional in whatever field you're in, whether it's banking, agriculture, it could be in the medicine field, STEM programs, whatever. If your company is offering any kind of internship programs or roles, these students need exposure. They need real life experience on how to operate in the world once they get out of school. So if you have any kind of internship opportunities, if they can shadow you, come to work with you, get on Zoom calls, some kind of mentoring program, something that really will expose them and show them and open them up to what the real world is like, that will be helpful. If you want to donate on the website and go through the website, let me get the website for you guys. It is OralLee Brown Foundation.org. So OralLee Brown Foundation.org. You can donate right through the website. You can also leave any kind of information that you want to leave behind. You can sign up to the newsletter and communicate with us or the program through that way. If you guys want to visit the program, do anything that as far as any kind of whatever initiatives you can help with, if you have some kind of think tank that you think young people can benefit from, invite the students over, invite us over. We will love to put students in front of anyone that would benefit them and it will spark interest, you know, that would change their lives one day. Yeah. Miss So, want to chime in?
That was great. That was, you pretty much touched on all the different ways. I mean, also, like, Phyllis brought up how some of the students are specifically interested in, like, a skill set such as like videography. So if there's like a videographer out there who's willing to teach a class, like a crash course to our students, that is an open gig that someone can help us with. Just like, you know, whatever skill that you feel you can bring forth to help our students get exposed to will be a great opportunity for them.
Thank you. And staying with our alumni, so circling back to you for a moment, Albert, could you share with the audience one of your favorite moments of participating in the OralLee program?
Oh man, how long you got? No, I'm just playing. I talked about the etiquette class early on. That was a big fun moment for me, was etiquette class. I still use that today at formal dinners from what I learned at 12 years old. But the most special moment for me would be my first banquet for the OralLee Brown Foundation, my first formal dinner, first big gala of dressing nice and seeing everybody in their dresses and tuxedos. It was the first time I ever had raspberry sherbet. It was the dessert for the dinner. Raspberry sherbet is my favorite dessert till this day. So I discovered my favorite dessert through going through the OralLee Brown Foundation Gala. So I think that was like one of the special takeaways from me amongst many. But I only like raspberry sherbet because of the OralLee Brown Foundation. So that was one of for me.
Wonderful. And Ratha, favorite moment?
My favorite moment of being in the program? I think I might have touched on this already, but it was just like moments of Mama Brown attending our graduation, that was definitely a very special time. And when she took us on a college tour, and that was such a fun and such a good time to just get exposed to different colleges that weren't, you know, in just in the East Bay. And so it really expanded my idea to attend a different college in SoCal if I wanted, and that opportunity would be just fine, and I can do that. And so the college tour was like, we traveled down to, I think it was like at least three different schools in SoCal. And I really considered going down to SoCal because of the tour, but it wasn't until I got accepted into Davis that I was just like, it was close to family. So that was just why I made that decision. But yeah, it really just opened my eyes to different opportunities in SoCal too.
Thank you. And turning to you, Philip, what are some of your favorite moments or one favorite moment of participating as a board member?
Well, I think the thing that really impressed me was the annual dinner we had, and all the alumni was there. There were media celebrities there. There were people from the business community there. Everybody came out, and it showed how much people cared about the kids. And, you know, with Ms. Brown's mission paralleling what my mom and her women's club did, I said, I'd like to make a contribution. And, you know, I'm in it for the long term. You know, I'm interested in bringing whatever creative ideas I can come up with and network of contacts to the table to support the program. I would like to float one idea out here. We do have some very impressive sports teams. Steph Curry is doing a lot with his foundation and all. But if some of the athletes who are doing well could make a contribution, it is tax deductible. And then challenge their service providers, the people who sold them their automobile, the people who provide their insurance, the people who provide their appliances. Challenge them to match what you're doing. It's all for the benefit of the kids. We need to do more for them. So step up.
Thank you. And Phyllis, favorite moment of working at Rolly?
Oh, that is so hard. That is so hard. I have a lot of favorite moments. For me, probably just seeing the world open up to students when they're first introduced to something new that they have never experienced, it just fills my heart, you know, to be able to see that's just something. And it happens often, you know, because like I say, their world is so small. So the more experiences we connect them to, the bigger their world begin to open up. And, you know, if all you see is one thing, that's all you have to ponder on. But the more things you experience, you get to see different things. And, you know, everyone thinks differently. So the different experiences they're exposed to, their different ideas connected with these different experiences. I mean, it just blows my mind, you know, because I'm like, I wouldn't even think of that. But to see these students come up with great ideas and great thought, you know, it's like, wow, you know, I'm learning from them as well, because it's like, I would have never thought about that. Where did that come from? So they blow my mind to just know all it takes is a little, and their minds are already just like going like fireworks popping off, and you give them so little, but they're growing their minds. It's just awesome to me just to see them connect and open their world up and move forward. And when the kids were getting the computers and it's at their house and they're learning stuff, and this is the information age, but somehow some people got left behind. But as they got the technology in their homes and the connections, then you just see them flourish. It's just, okay, I'm seeing it. But yeah, that probably was the moment when in April of 2020, I mean, we're in full pandemic mode, but they came out and social distanced themselves and got their computers and their internet connection. It was nice. It was just good to be giving it to them and helping them. And yeah, that was a good moment.
Thank you. Turning to our final question, and I'm going to start with you first, Albert. What do you think are some of the positive things that you see coming out of the pandemic to support both our low-income youth and their education?
I think the positive coming out of the pandemic to support our low-income youth is identification of what areas they actually need help when it comes to education. It's screaming that it's not a one-size-fit-all type of thing, that different individuals need different things, and that it's very important that we put whatever resource that's needed in front of these young people. And I think that the pandemic has showed that, because you can give them the laptop, but, you know, essentially, this is the first time I've ever had a computer at home now. So like, how do we operate this? Like, how do we optimize this tool that we just gave them? How do we teach them how to maneuver with electronics and matriculate through this virtual world now? So it's just not being very transparent and honest on what the needs are. And where we lack in is teaching these children and where we need to meet them in the middle and what they're lacking because of our lack of due diligence on teaching them the proper ways. And the fact that sometimes the old school system or old way of doing things is just very outdated and it just won't work. And we need to find a better way of doing things. And like Phyllis said, once you give them a little, you know, they'll take it from there and they will create things that you can't imagine, but we have to put it in front of them first. We have to expose them to what they need to be exposed to. And I think that the pandemic has showed that certain things is just not going to work. It never did work and it won't work and it's not going to work and we need to throw it out. But we still need to replace it with good things, good resources, good habits, good people, good education, good methods, good ways of thinking, good mindsets. You know, just I think that's the positive that the pandemic has created.
Thank you. And Phyllis, same question. What do you feel are some of the good things that could come out of the pandemic to support your work?
I'm going to say some of the things that came out of the pandemic for me was that the world slowed down. It seemed like everybody was in a rat race before. People had good ideas, good intentions, but things never got done. The world slowed down and we were able to put our thoughts into action. You know, you may have wanted to volunteer somewhere, but guess what? You never had the time. You may have wanted to go visit someone, but you didn't have the time. But then when everything was shut down, I think when you can't do what you want to do, then that makes you want it even better. And I think the world was able shut down. I mean, we couldn't even fathom a world being shut down. We can't go here. We can't go there. We can't do what we want. And I think when the world slowed down, for me, what I got out of it personally was a closer and intimate walk with God. And I don't know if people, but this is for me, a closer and intimate walk with God. It made me get closer and enjoy my family on a much deeper level. It showed us that tomorrow's not promised to us. So many people were dying and it just blew my mind that, you know, people were here today and gone today. Things you was like, oh, I'm going to call you back, but you never got to call that person back because then we put off doing things for little bitty things. You were so busy that you couldn't pick up the phone, but you really wasn't that busy when you looked at it in the grand scheme of things. But for me, people were able to stop and see their children and enjoy their children. And parents were able to get in the kitchen and cook with their kids. I mean, the world has slowed down. You didn't know after dinner, you going in that kitchen and cook. Just people were going back to basics is not bad. You know, back to basics was good. The world was moving so fast and we were spiraling and doing things and too busy to enjoy life. And so we took a breath and it's like, okay, now where do I want to go? Okay, I've been, like Albert said, I've been working for these Fortune 500 corporations. But what is it that is here for me, really? What is my purpose here on life? What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to help? Who's my service to? What is my service to? So I think the pandemic just slowed it down. It's like, how can we better service the youth? How can we give them what they need? Not what we want to give them, what they need. You know, people like to give you what they, okay, well, I'm going to donate this. Don't donate something because you no longer want it. You donate to support. Or, you know, some people are like, well, I donated my clothes that I didn't want anymore. And sometimes, you know, one man's treasure is another man's treasure. But in the case, like Albert was saying, people want to donate the computers. Computers have a limited time and then they're obsolete. If they can't move fast, and like I say, with these students' minds moving so fast, they need technology that moves just as fast as them. So, you know, just getting back to basics and moving forward with the thought of service to others as opposed to ourselves. How do we help? How do we give back? These people we're servicing and giving to, you know, what they say, the people you need going up, you might need coming down. So less support, less help, because those same people might be the same people who are going to be our nurses and our doctors down the road. So, yeah.
Thank you. And Philip, what do you feel are some of the positive things that come out of the pandemic to support our youth and the Oral Leaf Foundation's work?
Well, yeah, I think the whole situation where things slowed down allowed for more thought and creative thinking on how do we work around this problem to still accomplish our goals for the kids. And I know that instead of doing a whole lot of driving, I do a whole lot more walking these days. And in that process, you know, a lot of things run through your mind. You can sort out questions and strategies and, you know, improve your health at the same time. So that's a big plus. It's more challenging meeting people. You know, we would love to be able to meet Melinda Gates at an event in San Francisco and tell her about our work and ask her to consider being a buddy for the Oral Leaf Brown Foundation. Or Mr. Bezos' former wife. They're very resourceful people. They're looking for good things to do. We can put that money to work for you locally. So it's the adversity drives thinking on creative solutions to the barriers. And I think that's the best thing that's happened so far.
Great. I want to thank Phyllis and Philip for sharing the Oral Leaf Brown Foundation programs and services work today. I also want to thank Rafa and Albert for sharing their experience with participating in the Oral Leaf Brown Foundation programs, as well as how the programs have impacted their education and lives. We'll make sure that listeners have your contact information, your website, and social media so that students can apply for Oral Leaf Brown Foundation programs, get engaged in the work, and to help our low-income youth to continue their education and participate in college. Please stay safe and healthy as we all work our way through this pseudo-new normal. That's it for this one-hour special show focused on education and the importance of one person's vision to help youth go to college and how this help, in turn, changes their lives. You've been listening to the voices of Executive Director Phyllis O'Para and Board of Directors member Philip Palmer, along with program alumni Rotha So and Albert Jenkins. To make a donation, volunteer, and support the work of the Oral Leaf Brown Foundation, please go to oralleafbrownfoundation.org. We want to thank Alameda County for the usage of the audio portion of their interview with Oral Leaf Brown on education, and a special thanks to Reverend R.L. McKnight, along with producers Edmund Broussard and Miss M, for the usage of their audio portion of their wonderful interview with Oral Leaf Brown on their show, Giving Back to the Community. Go to YouTube and search for Edmund Broussard to watch all of his great interviews with community leaders in Oakland. We hope that you enjoyed the insights, points of view, and personal stories from the voices of changemakers and their nonprofits and small businesses featured in this series. To find out more and get engaged with the nonprofits, small businesses, and staff members featured in the series, please go to my website, georgecoster.com, and click on Voices of the Community to find links to the extended versions of these interviews and to listen to the entire series. After listening to these stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to provide a hand up to your fellow community members. Today's episode was made possible by the audio wizard and our associate producer, Eric Estrada, and the graphics magic of Casey Nance from Citron Studios, along with the wonderful crew at the San Francisco Public Press and KSFP. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the James Irvine Foundation, dedicated to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. More at irvine.org. Voices of the Community is a member of Intersection for the Arts, which allows us to offer you a tax deduction for your contributions. Please go to georgecoster.com and click on the donate link to make a donation to help us provide future shows just like this one. While you're on our website, you can enjoy our archived past shows, which feature community voices working on solutions to critical issues facing Northern California communities. And you can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about future shows, as well as shows and events from the organizations that are included in our episodes. Take us along on your next COVID walk by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at George Coster, and we'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas, so send us an email to george@georgecoster.com. I'm George Coster in San Francisco, and thank you for listening.